What's up, guys? Welcome back to the R&B show. My name's Ridge. As always, I have Noah here and Brady.
Yo.
But today, hello, we have a super special guest, and he goes by the name Jake Johnson.
What's going on?
Yes, you heard that right. Johnson. But like normal, today we're going to be starting our podcast off with the verse of the day. And this is one of my personal favorites. When doubts fill my mind, your comfort gave me renewed hope and cheer. And that comes from Psalms 94:19. But yeah, I mean, Jake, do you want to introduce yourself a little bit? Let the people get to know who you are.
Yeah, for sure. My name's Jake. I've been friends with Brady and Noah for Brady about only like coming up on 2 years, but Noah 4 years.
Bro, I've been since junior year.
Yeah, so coming up on 2 years.
Three. Hey, whatever. Jake, look at the mic when you talk a little bit more. You don't have to stare at the mic, bro. You just got to talk into the mic.
Right on. Okay. I went to the same high school with Brady and Noah, and we graduated together. Mutual friend Josiah. And I met Ridge about 2 years ago, actually, too. So, yeah, my junior year.
Where did we meet?
We were going to work for Joe Hearn Events. Ooh. Yeah. Special shout out to Joe Hearn Events.
Not a sponsor. Never will be.
Hell yeah.
Don't want them.
No, it's hell no.
But yeah.
Guy sucks.
I kind of remember that car, that car ride there with, I think it was me, you, Josiah, and Graham.
Right.
And you guys know Graham. He was on the last episode. But it was my first time actually really meeting Jake and Graham that day. And it was just like a goofball full of like that was a weird way to say that. It was a goofy car ride like all the way there.
Yeah.
And I'm going like about my normal day, like talking to Josiah kind of like I would every day. And like talking about the nephew, like my kids, his nephews, and like going on like Brecken this, Brecken that, like Bowden did this. And from the back, Jake, what did we hear you say in like the middle of my conversation with Josiah?
I was like, what the hell is a Brecken?
Jake, not knowing who these kids are, like not even knowing who I am. So he didn't really know I had kids. He knew Josiah had nephews and all that. But I remember we all just like busted out laughing, driving in Josiah's truck. And it was like, dude, Brecken's my kid, you jackass. And that was just like our first introduction to each other. And then from then, we've only grown closer and kind of built this support system since Josiah passed. And it's been a blessing, just like it has been to know Noah and Brady, to have Jake here and be able to talk to him and just have him as a friend and be able to consider him a friend. So that's been a really good blessing in my life. So explain like school a little bit. So you said you went to Orangewood with them for high school. Right. What about like when you were younger? Where did you go?
So I started out, the earliest school I can remember was Brantley. I went there for kindergarten. And that was when I was living with my mom. Then I went to Altamont Elementary School, and I stayed there all the way through like fifth grade. And then went to Orangewood. I am honestly blanking on where I went in sixth grade, but was at Orangewood for seventh and eighth. Moved back down to South Florida with my mom, and where I was at J.P. Taravella High School. And I hated every second of that. That was a horrible experience.
Do you know Kodak Black?
I know where he lives. Like, he actually lives in a gated community.
Which assuming is you're from Broward, or lived in Broward, not from Broward.
Yeah, exit 36, 10 toes down. That's where I stay. I'm a Noia boy all the way. Please don't quote me on that. I don't bang. I'm not with any of that. I doubt this would reach any of that kind of audience.
Jake's having some people knock on his apartment door later tonight. So you were born in the Central Florida area then, and mm-hmm. kind of like your early, like up until like through kindergarten, a little bit of middle school, went to, stayed mm-hmm. here, moved down to South Florida, got transplanted back up here. And then after high school, you moved back down to South Florida, right?
Right. So that wasn't really by choice. There was some, I don't know if we want to dive that deep right off the bat.
But, no, I mean, we can cover things later. I'm just trying to get to know you a little bit more for the audience.
Yeah, so like right after high school, stayed the summer living with my dad. And then I want to say early August, I was already enrolled at Seminole State College. And in the middle of the school year, I had to abruptly move down to South Florida. And lost a lot of my completion rate for my classes went down. So now I'm not eligible for financial aid, which proved to kind of be tough. But college education is something that I've always wanted to pursue. So I'm making it happen.
Yeah, that's good for you. I mean, college can be a really good thing for some people, and it can be a really bad thing for other people. It just depends on your experiences in life and kind of the path you want to take. I mean, I didn't go to college. I kind of like to think I'm doing all right, but I'm doing the best I can. But what was it like being in South Florida compared to up here? Like,
it's crazy how a matter of miles can drastically change a social climate. It's like two completely different worlds. And honestly, when I was living there for the short period that I did, you guys probably wouldn't even recognize me. The cadence of my voice was different. I had a completely different personality. And that's just something that you're kind of forced to adopt. A lot of people will, you know, discredit me or say that I was even like cultural appropriation to a degree, but like, when you're one of the few white kids at, you know, a school of like 7,000 people, you're forced to adapt and change. And I did drastically. And it was tough. You know, a lot of the people I knew, especially at that age, you know, coming into high school, you know, you're like a clay for your environment to imprint on. And that's exactly what it did. And for a while, you know, I had some kind of personal issues, like just not really knowing who I am.
Yeah.
Because it just didn't feel right. But, you know, that's who I was for a short period. But I'm glad to have came back and kind of found myself and found a completely different sense of community that I'm, you know, really grateful for.
Yeah. And that's not really like a skill that a lot of people can like adapt to or obtain really easily, and being able to adapt like that. But that's also like one of the, like, it's an extremely hard thing to be able to do, like, especially how you said, like, being one of the few white kids in a school of 7,000 people, the amount of pressure that's on you, like the amount of eyes that are on you, that can like really bear some weight and go on your shoulders. So for you to be able to adapt like that is really incredible, and it's not a bad thing. I mean, you're a product of your environment, and absolutely. From the stories you've told me, it sounds like the environment down there was not the best for you. Right. So we're all extremely happy that you're back up here and you're living local. And he actually lives with Graham, who was on the last podcast. So they're roommates. They live right up the street from me. So hopefully Jake comes around a lot more than he did before when he was in South Florida. We were only able to really see him once every few months, if that, when he was down there. So I'm looking forward to being able to build this relationship with you and kind of get to know you more and just become closer friends. Excuse me. But yeah, I mean, it's really, you guys can laugh, it's not a problem. I coughed. I mean, Brady's
it wasn't the cough, it was the excuse me.
No, leave me alone.
Don't Brady's not me. Even paying attention to us right now. He's just texting on his phone.
Leave me alone.
Me.
And by the way, if you guys hear us with little silent whispers, we are sitting at this table with my awesome wife, Deanna, and my lifelong best friend of 23 years, Tanner. Yeah. So
Simmermacher, not Smith.
Yeah, Simmermacher, not Smith. Don't get too excited, pool Tanner Smith. Man. Tanner the pool man Simmermacher. Tanner, give him a little what's up?
What's up? Sounds like he's a football field away.
But yeah, I mean Tanner, speaking of Tanner, yeah, we've known I'm trying to convince him to come on this podcast. He will eventually. Who's doing that, Tanner?
It was Brady.
Oh. He will eventually. I think he might have some really fun pool stories
for us. Nah, like what?
We'll see.
No, but it would be more of a lifelong of friendship stories and knowing each other for 22, 23 years. And all that, but we've had some crazy stories together, and hopefully we'll be able to dive into that here soon in a few episodes. Noah, I do know that you asked me if you could ask a few questions earlier. Yeah. So did Brady. So whoever wants to go first,
I'll go ahead.
Why do you get to go first? I'm just kidding.
Go ahead. Always last.
You know, so like whether it have been down here in South Florida. Kind of what are some good and bad decisions that you made, and how did they affect you?
So I feel like the decisions I made in South Florida were never good. Mm-hmm. I honestly can't think back to a single one that I made in South Florida. Besides a few of the friends that I kept over the years, most of the decisions I made were terrible. Like for instance, I don't even really want to call it a gang. It was just like a bunch of high schoolers, like ninth through like senior year, who like put reckless dot their name in their Instagram username. And there was a couple of other kids. Yeah, it was reckless.j actually. And before that it was wavy jit. So reckless.j and all of his, you know, friends, there was a few others that like did things similar, like YMC, which was like Young Money Crew. It was really a joke. But what we would do is we would literally just meet up and fight. And rarely it'd be like a kind of like a group fight. It would never really be like a planned group ball. It would just be like somebody started jumping and then everybody's fighting. But one time we were at Mullins Park. If you're from South Florida, you know where that's at. And you also know that there is a police station built into the park, which is a horrible location. I don't know why nobody thought that that was like a terrible idea to go there. But so we're at Mullins Park it started with like a series of just one-on-ones. We, you know, you shoot the 30, but our guy, I honestly don't even remember his name, but was beating the brakes off of this kid from YMC. And YMC is like notoriously known for jumping. And of course they started jumping. And at the time I had a couple airsoft guns that looked, you know, if you have airsoft guns or you've ever gotten into the scene, you know they look insanely real, and they feel real too. Yeah. They have like a weight to them. And so I pulled out a airsoft pistol that looked insanely real, and the crowd just started to disperse, and everybody, you know, started to back up. But before that, they had like a real gang member there who was in his 20s. He was a tatted GD, had GD like tatted across his stomach.
GD.
Gangster Disciple.
Okay.
And so when I pulled out the pistol and pointed it at the YMC kids, he came up from behind me and socked me in the side of the head. And if you didn't know, and you probably don't, but I was really skinny back then, like skinnier than I am now, and I'm still pretty skinny. But so for this tatted, you know, real gang member to sock me in the side of the head, I dropped like a sack of potatoes, and I had my backpack on the front of me. And so I put the gun right back, and they instantly started to try to take my strap away from me. And so I stuffed my fake gun in the backpack in front of me, and like I fell onto my stomach. And then I was getting viciously jumped. Like I was getting my head stomped down into the grass. I was getting like booted into the side of my face. They were kicking me in the ribs. just like getting stomped by like five or six people. And my friend Makai, we kind of had a falling out, so we're not friends anymore, but he came up, and hopefully this doesn't get him in any trouble, but he came up and actually stabbed the GD. And then the GD's like, you know, holy crap, I just got stabbed. And then they started to back off of me. But by that time, like I said, there's a police station built right into the park, and police were like swarming us. So I had tried to get up, and I'm running the best as I can, but I just got jumped like viciously. So it's extremely painful. And, you know, there's blood dripping down the side of my face and whatnot. And we're running through the park, like onto the sidewalk. And once we saw like the cops drive up onto the sidewalk, like ripping through the park after us, and they're going on the intercom, we have dogs, we're gonna release dogs. I just, you know, and I have a backpack full of, you know, fake guns strapped to the front of my chest. So I'm like, you know, let me cut my losses here. And I threw the backpack down, I put my hands up in the air, and then, you know, they ran up and arrested me. And I sat in a holding cell till about 3 a.m. and I got arrested probably like 6 o'clock in the afternoon.
How old were you when this happened?
I was 14.
Jeez. Golly.
Yeah, I wasn't even old enough, and I got charged with unlawful possession of a weapon for a minor because I wasn't allowed. I was so young, I wasn't even allowed to have an airsoft gun.
Jeez, that's wild.
I did a teen court program and got my record expunged once I turned 18. And I would like to say that opened my eyes to a lot of things, but it didn't. And you know, I kind of stayed along the same path. Was just more careful where I fought. So that was a tough time. I know that weighed heavy on my mom. I wasn't really in speaking terms with my dad. We were pretty estranged at that point. He would be like kind of drip fed information about me from my mom, but not really, because my mom hates my dad. So he really didn't know how I was doing. And I think that kind of experience kind of sums up mm-hmm. what I was doing and yeah. how I was doing down there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, with that, you know, I was doing all kinds of drugs, you know, smoking weed like almost every day, all day, every day. And also, that was around the time of COVID. So we weren't even like, a lot of time we weren't even in school. It was like online school. So yeah, that really speaks volumes to what I was doing. Yeah. What I was doing down in South Florida.
Sure. I got another question for you. You know, so we grew up in a Christian school together.
Mm-hmm.
From when you were there, when you were not. Kind of, where is your faith at now versus where was it at kind of when we were in Orangewood? And then, like, kind of, where do you want it to be in the future?
Where did your faith start? Like, when was the first time you started, like, thinking, having even, like, that faithful mind thought?
So my parents aren't religious. My mom is kind of the Christian that is Christian when it's convenient. But my dad and my mom aren't religious like at all. But my dad put me into Orangewood because it was just a good school and he wanted me there. Especially put me back into Orangewood once I came back from South Florida because of how I was acting. Which I am extremely grateful for. Mm-hmm. It really screwed my head on straight. But honestly, I've decided that I kind of want to pursue Christ. And because I had two friends pass, and once I had the opportunity to see how.
And everyone knows about Josiah, like if you've listened to the episode. So.
So Brandon was like my best friend down in South Florida. Everybody that knows me knows that like I like to fight. I still like to fight. Like I train, and it's just something that I love. I'm not like going into the street and, you know, just looking for people to fight. But I still like to fight. It's just something that And also, all my friends know I've never been good at like any sports, but fighting is just something that's completely different. It's something that I've just kind of picked up and I really enjoy. But he got me into that. Yeah, he, to the best he could, like trained me how to fight. We would box all the time, and he was really like my big brother. And when I really needed him. And he died December 22nd of 2023. He got into a terrible car accident and passed. And that was 2 months after Josiah had passed. So that was a serious punch in the gut.
Yeah, that's a lot in 2 months to take on.
Uh-huh. But when I came over to Josiah's house and I saw his family and, you know, obviously I don't know what goes on behind closed doors, but just to see how Miss Robin, so grounded in her faith to the point where she would comfort me. She had just lost her son and she's comforting me because she knows wholeheartedly that her son is in a better place. And then I saw Brandon's family, somebody that I know wasn't entirely grounded in faith. And they were a mess, and it's something that like really sticks with you. And they took it very hard. If you don't have that kind of hope that you'll see your son again and that you know your son is in a better place, you're just thinking that my son is dead. I can understand. Well, actually, I have no idea what it's like to lose a son. I know what it's like to lose a friend, but to lose a son is something that I hopefully we'll never have to go through. Yeah. And we'll never know what that's truly like. But just to see the difference between both parents and how hard Brandon's parents were taking it to the point where they couldn't even hide it was just really eye-opening. And it made me wonder if this, you know, Christianity is something we're subscribing to. And then also, you know, I've you know, kind of struggled with, like, personal issues. And, you know, there's kind of, like, a hole that nothing can really fill. So I'm kind of hoping to fill that with Christ. I'll see how that goes.
Yeah, and to elaborate on that a little bit. So, like, the difference between the two families, because obviously I've been living in the same household as the Hudspeths, as Robin and Tim and Jackson and Megan and all them, and yes, Brady. Essentially, Brady and Noah have been living here as well the last 4 months. It's that promise of eternal life that our body, like the one way I like to describe it is our body is completely temporary, but our like soul and our spirit is forever going to live in eternity with Jesus. And so the way you can think of it is as a glove. If you put a glove on your hand, that glove is the body or the soul. I mean, it's really however you want to think about it. But when that glove comes off, that's your spirit going to heaven and your body is left behind. Mm. Like that's your soul leaving your body and your spirit leaving your body. And it's been just as encouraging, like, as it has been to you. It's been one of the most astounding, like, amazing things that I think anybody sitting at this table has witnessed is, like, man, you just lost your 18-year-old son. Yet, you showed up to church, and he died on a Wednesday. They showed up to church on Sunday and worshiped, like, because they knew where he was at. They knew what he would be doing. They know he's dancing in eternity with Jesus. I mean, he's up there with people we never, like, I can't, it's honestly, there's a bit of jealousy that comes from me because Josiah's up there and he's having conversations with Jonah, with Moses, like Noah, all these people that you read about in the Bible. And hopefully we'll be able to start reading about it, like, and because I know you're super young in your faith, and you might not know. I mean, if you know these stuff, you know them from Bible class from Orangewood.
Right.
Like it, which I can't wait to like share these stories with you and get into like a Bible study with the you young guys. But it's like there's like major jealousy in me that like I'm left down here. And I think in everybody in this house is like, man, we're left down here to miss him, to mourn him and all this. And he's up there like dancing, having a good time, like thriving better than like no sickness, no health, no anxiety, no depression or no bad health. I said no health, just like fully thriving. And they've just been such an inspiration to like see them care so much about other people and still spread the gospel. Like if there's that thing just went off again and it bothered me. If there's a reason to lose faith, like this is it, but they didn't. And that's like blows my mind. So I am extremely proud of you for like being able to like step up, because you asked us if you can go to church with us on Sunday. And unfortunately, the church's AC was broken on Sunday. Yeah. So it was like, I was like thinking in my head the whole time, I was like, man, Jake like picked the 1 week where it's 95 degrees in this church to come. But hopefully that didn't deter you at all. Yeah. And you'll be able to come more with us and enjoy it. But it's just like, it's so, dang, that ice maker is killing me right now. It's like so encouraging to know.
Go catch it.
Yeah, Tanner, go catch every individual ice cube.
And just put it down softly.
It's encouraging to know that, like, you're going through tough times. You've been through some incredibly tough times. But to know, like, that you're striving and reaching to fill those holes, to fill those voids in your life, those gaps where you might not know what to do. Because believe me, when you don't know what to do, all you got to do, dude, is just like talk to God, like ask him and bring Jesus into your life. And those voids are non-existent, like ever again. Like he takes away all anxieties, all depression, all sickness. All you got to do is ask. Like it's that simple. That's all he wants, is us for us to have him in our lives and ask him for help. Like it's simple. And I know that can be hard to wrap your head around sometimes, but it really does come in handy, and it comes easier and easier like the more you do it. But sorry to the show.
You're chilling. No, you kind of answered my last question I had about kind of why you started to pursue church. You kind of answered that, but I just want to say like I'm extremely grateful that you came to church with us. Like I'm excited to see where you're gonna be at in the future, and you know. Where I can learn things from you to help better my faith too. It's just I'm extremely blessed and grateful.
Yeah, me too.
I feel like this has just been like the Ridge and Noah and Jake show. Brady has been
on his phone.
Brady went nonverbal again.
like college football when he was losing the Ridge.
But then I came back and whooped his ass still by two scores.
Yeah. So Brady, I feel like it's only polite if I ask what you've got for us, man.
Nah, don't worry about it. It's all
good, bro. Okay, good. Then so get off the show. Let me mute your mic and we'll carry. I'm just kidding. Take it away.
So bro. Now y'all get an insight of how mean Ridge and Noah are to me. This is like an abusive like household. They're like very nice on mics and they just beat me.
The R&J show now.
Yeah, right.
Has a nice ring to it.
Give me my money back. Pay all your money. So obviously I've known Jake for a minute and obviously, I met Jake over the phone on Xbox, actually, out of nowhere. It was with Tanner. We were playing GTA, and Tanner's like, my friend Jake's going to join. I'm like, okay.
Did you guys meet on Tinder?
Okay. Yeah. Can you shut up? Anyways, and he joined the party. Stop. He joined the party, and me and him talked for a little bit, and we're like talking about things that I had no idea what he was talking about, but I just knew he was coming to Orangewood, and I was like, okay, that's sweet. I know someone else is coming to Orangewood for the first time again, fresh start. Anyways, obviously I know a lot about you, but I also have some questions about, obviously we talked about Josiah already and your friend, and obviously we've asked everyone basically on the show so far about what their favorite experience was with Josiah, and that's what I was going to ask you as well, is what was your favorite experience with Josiah, or like altering?
So the months leading up to before Josiah passing, we really picked up surfing. I had surfed like on and off, like just because I thought it was cool, but never like really because I enjoyed it. But once I started going with Josiah, we really took a liking to it, both of us. And I was so glad to be able to share that with somebody because, you know, we'd inquired with like the entire friend group, like, does anybody want to go surfing? And everybody's like, no, not really. But besides Josiah. And for guys, it's a little different to like hang out like one on one. It's like, not, I don't want to say it's unusual, but like it doesn't happen often. At least in my experience. Yeah, why is that
funny? It's funny because Tanner and I were homeschooled growing up, and we literally only hung out with each other. Like, nobody, just one-on-one all the time.
What even happened behind those closed doors?
We'll get into that when Tanner comes on the podcast. Anatomy.
So anyways, so yeah, it was always surfing, and one experience that I can remember super vividly, and even after he passed, like, I would dream about it, like a recurring dream.
Dude,
who
was that? That was Noah.
That was Rich. That was so milky, bro. Whatever that was milky.
Go check your band. But anyways, it was like, I forget the name of the hurricane, but it was a hurricane was hitting Florida.
Hurricane Katrina. More like Hurricane Tortilla.
Yo, shut up.
Hurricane Katrina jokes are not funny. We need a laugh track because that was bad.
Never again. Never again. Never again.
Okay, so. So anyways. Some hurricane, I forget the name of it, but it was like, obviously, 2023, but it was hitting over the summer, and we went super early in the morning, like right as the sun was rising, and the waves were huge, like the biggest we had probably surfed, and they were incredibly, like, buttery, like, it was insane, it was perfect weather. It really was. The paddle out. And I don't know if, like, if you've ever been to New Smyrna Beach, if you ever tried to surf New Smyrna Beach, you know the paddle out is ruthless because there's no break. Or actually, the break is everywhere. So there's no easy way to paddle out. But we paddled right out there, which is something that we never have any other time. And we both caught the best waves of our lives.
We both caught feelings for each other.
Yeah. Not funny.
I'm going over a special memory here, dude. Shut up.
Yeah, Reg, swinging a mess, buddy.
So yeah, and just to like share that, and for like a surfer, that's like really important, and like really special, and to share that with somebody so close was really awesome. And like I said, like it was something like almost out of a movie. Like the sun was rising and like the waves were huge and perfect and the weather was perfect. It wasn't too hot. And like, I remember watching him catch his and watching him disappear behind the back of the wave and then pop out the other side. And I just felt like so happy for him. And like just completely ecstatic, and then he paddled up to me, and we're just laughing the whole time, and yeah, it was just really great, and that was something that like really stuck with me, and then even turned into like a recurring dream, which I've never had, and never like since have had like, but yeah, that was like really special, and something I'll cherish forever.
That's pretty cool. Let me piggyback off that real quick. What's like the scariest or most nervous Josiah? Because so far everyone has had like one of those stories where they're like, he scared the dog out of me. Like that kid was crazy.
Well, so far it's involved three times driving to them with the white Audi.
Yeah, mine is also him driving with the white Audi. I was
3 for 4.
Yeah, that kid was insane. Like, and to scare other teenage boys who also share a need for speed is like, you know, speaks levels. But there was one time, and it was another time we were going to go work for Joe Hearn, but we were driving and he was just about to make this like insane cut. He like really didn't have enough room. Like the car that he was cutting in front of definitely had to have braked because they saw what he was doing. But he flew up onto the back of this car so fast that Graham was in the front seat. Graham physically recoiled and like put his arm and his leg came up like to his face because he thought 1000% we were about to smash into the back of this car. And you know when you get so scared you just freeze? Like I couldn't even like muster the words to tell him to slow down or anything. I just completely froze and my heart was thumping out of my chest. And yeah, no, that was insanely scary. Another time, I guess, would be like when we were out on the water. But this wasn't more so like Josiah scaring. Actually, yeah, I guess it is because I got sucked over the falls on one of the bigger days at NSB's. And if you don't know what that means when you paddle over a breaking wave and the break is so strong that like it pulls you backwards and then the entire weight of the wave crushes you down into the sand and holds you there for some time. And when you're held underwater and the weight of the water knocks the wind out of you, I 1000% thought I was going to drown. And I'm like, am I seriously going to drown on East Coast waves? But I pop back out and I completely lose him. I have no idea where he's at. And we paddled over the same wave. So I'm thinking, did he like literally drown too? Or did I come up and he didn't? And I like completely lost him. I couldn't find him for like an hour. I paddled all the way back to shore because I was like, did he get out? And apparently he had watched me go over the falls, laughed, and just continued surfing. and I'm freaking out on shore. I'm like, do I need to go get a lifeguard? And it wasn't until like I'm walking up and down the shoreline, I see him on a wave, you know, and I'm honestly, you know, I was livid. I was pissed as a kid because I'm like, but like to him, he thought it was nothing. But to me, I thought, you know, one of my best friends had just drowned. And he was deep enough, he couldn't hear me. So I was trying to paddle back out to where he was. And I was just furious. So I wasn't trying to duck dive. I was just trying to like mean face it through these waves and couldn't get out. And that was the most frustrating thing. I was like, are you serious? I can't get out right now. I can't even go yell at him or like whatever. So I just went back to the truck and had to wait for him to come back in. And then I was like, did you not wonder where I was at for like the past hour and a half? And he's like, I thought you just continued as well. And I'm like, no, dude, I almost drowned. And then he started and then laughed in my face. So
his shoulder shrug laugh, probably.
Yeah. You know, if you know him, you know the exact laugh, like where like ear to ear grin, like his eyes almost go shut. But yeah, so that was another time he scared me.
Dang, I don't even know what to say to that. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah,
sounds like
so crazy.
From every like story I hear about Josiah, it just sounds like he goes to like get into something new, like with his friends, and goes out and does it like with people. Because you surfed before Josiah, right? Mm-hmm. Like you surfed for a little bit.
Yeah.
So it always sounds like he like goes out and does it, and somehow he's automatically 10 times better than everyone else.
It made me mad how good he picked it, like how fast he picked it up, and like he was already getting better than me. I blamed it on the board. He had a nicer board, but no, he was already getting better than me, and but that was just the kind of kid he was. Like
he was good at everything. Like
he was just like one of those guys. Like it was weird how good he was like just good at everything, and like not just had like this confidence about him, but like not boastful at all either. So
yeah. He'd probably be a better pool cleaner than Tanner, and Tanner's been doing it for his whole life.
Probably.
Honestly.
Jeez. Throwing strays at him? What's your problem, man?
We got to prep him for what it's like being on the podcast.
I mean, it's not like we're going to rip him apart.
What are we going to do?
Rip him apart?
Oh. I heard rub him I apart.
And we could do that, too.
All right, Brady, what else do you have, dude? Hurry up.
Why is it so funny? You think rubbing him out's funny now?
Is this not a Christian podcast?
Anyways, yeah, so Brady, why was I in
unfiltered faith.
You made the joke first.
Actually, he made the joke?
Yeah, so I don't know why you're throwing crap at me, guy. Anyways, so obviously we talked about how you've had a split household, you know, ever since you could, like, remember. And obviously with that comes, you know, times and areas where you learn a lot of key, fundamental, like, you know, important things with having two parents in that household. Do you feel like there's anything that you really, you know, not like lack, but more like how to, like, teach yourself how to do because you didn't have that, like, solidified household of mom and dad always together?
Yeah, for sure. I think anybody that's had, like, a unconventional or a tough childhood would agree that it forces you to grow up quicker. And that's something that, like, my mom, my dad, my family members that I would talk to said I had this maturity about me that a lot of kids my age didn't have. And I also kind of picked that up. Like, I never thought that, like, I was, you know, better or, you know, more mature than anybody, but it was something that I kind of just noticed, like, subconsciously. But yeah, I would say that, like, you had to grow up quicker, you learn things faster, not like academically, but socially. And yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I obviously have no idea of how it works because had my parents, you know, together for all this time. But obviously, I mean, we talked to Graham already about moving back, stuff like that. Do you feel like now, obviously, since you've moved back in and stuff like that, and, you know, you've got a full-time, you're working now, correct? Or are you finding another job? What's up with that?
Yeah, I'm in between jobs right now. So I got my 215 insurance license to sell insurance for Aflac. And if you were thinking about doing that job, I would seriously caution you against it unless you can sit on your hands for 6 months and not generate any income.
Aflac.
Yeah, we're the duck. And also for somebody with my temperament, that sales just wasn't the avenue for me. Yeah, it also depends on the market. But right now I'm in between jobs. I'm looking more towards Salesforce. I'm going to get Salesforce certified to become an administrator. Once I do that, I'm looking at probably 27 to 30 an hour, which is not bad and, no, you know, cover all my bills for sure.
Yeah, especially at 19 years old.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously you moved in with Grams like that. You know, what I always wondered with people is like that is, like, a lot of people say you can't have a business with friends because it makes it a lot harder because, you know, you have a lot more leeway out. My question to you is, moving in with Graham, do you feel like that's, you know, changed your guys' friendship dynamic, or that, you know, you guys have to be a little more like adult-y with each other, not as they used to be?
Yeah, starting out, it for sure did. And honestly, I was like, was this a bad idea? And it kind of felt like we were, this is probably one-sided. Graham is kind of like a lackadaisical, everything rolls right off of him. But recently that's changed. But I wouldn't say it changed us too much. I will say that it was about to, but we have a strong friendship, and I'm super grateful for that. So, I don't think it's changed, like, our friendship.
Yeah, that's also what's most important. Obviously, Holmes has his set of experiences. He's living with three other guys that he's pretty close friends with, and they're not trying to auction his room off because he's never home.
Yeah, it's just.
What do you mean? He's always home.
I'm always home.
Talking about his second home at this point. Back at UCF, I mean, man, they're
bro's got four homes.
They're gonna auction his room off, man.
I mean, I wouldn't be mad if they did.
Check on Verbo, you know, for a little room to rent out.
It's a bad decision.
But obviously, I mean, with obviously career goals and like long-term things, are you looking to stay in Orlando area or do you want to like venture off? What's your like, I guess, put it 5-year, 10-year plan?
So I didn't know this was a job interview, but, but honestly, you know, with the reason why I'm pursuing Salesforce is because I always look for jobs where there's room to grow. There is immense room to grow. You can get multiple certifications in different things. And, you know, so I hope it works out. I mean, I'm still new. Like, I made a mistake with the insurance thing. In theory, that'd be a good opportunity. But like I said, I don't have 6 months to wait to build a client portfolio and build a business pipeline and all that, you know, sales jargon they talk about.
Yeah, it takes a long time.
Yeah. But, you know, making an hourly wage, especially a high hourly wage, or to me is high, but a high hourly wage like that, you know, I'm open to anything. But like I said, I am in college, so pretty undecided on my major, but, you know, that always changes. Anyways, so I guess I'll just see where things take me.
Yeah, obviously, you got time on your... Obviously, we're all young. Well, besides Rich, but we all have
bro, time. He's 28.
Yeah, but Rich already has... Rich already decided what he's, like, you know, his whole path is. We're still in college. We're still trying to figure it out. We don't have... this is a compliment to you. This is not a dig on you at all, because you are a lot ahead of us in life, and you already have a lot of things already figured out that we have no clue on. Trust me, that's a good thing.
I probably don't have a lot of it figured out, but I'm doing my best.
Yeah, that was kind of just a long explanation.
You fake it pretty well.
I have no idea what it is. Fake it till you make it.
Yeah, but obviously, I mean, I'm going for business. I don't know what Holmes is going for.
Construction management.
And obviously, Jake is undecided at this point. I mean, obviously, do you want to, you know, obviously stay at school you're at, or do you want to venture off somewhere else?
Well, I'm doing, like, the typical, like, 2 years community. I guess, you know, Seminole State technically is not a community college, but, yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? But yeah. After that, I'm going to transfer into UCF.
Go Knights!
You're a Bama... Oh, my God. You're a Georgia fan.
You're a Bama fan.
I'm a Bama fan. Crap.
You got to remind him.
The Bama wagon. Sorry, did you end your question?
Yeah. I was like... Or am I going to stay at Seminole State? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to UCF after two years or a year or whatnot.
I had a quick question. How, like, from, like, growing up, let's say, like, 14 on, because 14 kind of seems like when you really started to get into, like, the bad things. How would you want to live your life differently from then on? Like, would you go back and change things, or would you kind of leave it how it is because you feel like it's made you grow to who you are today?
Honestly, there are some things that, like, I regret, but I would not change a thing. I think that that experience made me into who I am, and without that, without, you know, opening all those doors, you don't know what's on the other side. And just to, you know, really put myself, not necessarily that I was doing it on purpose, but just to come from being so low to seeing what I have the potential for, was super eye-opening. And you don't even realize how bad things are getting until you change your environment or you make things change for yourself. And so, no, I wouldn't go back and change a thing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's good. I mean, because... we all experience things in life, and a lot of times, you know, people look back and like, oh, I really regret this, but a lot of people don't look at it as like kind of like a blessing in disguise, you know, like I experienced that at a young age, and like now I know like either A, how to stay away from it, or B, like this is something that, you know, is really good for me. And obviously a lot of people go through that, you know, failing and, you know, attempting stuff, and it's not easy. Obviously you're going to fail a lot more than you're going to succeed, so.
Anybody that tells you that they succeed more than they fail... are
liars,
lying right to your face. Yeah. So,
absolutely.
So going back into what we were talking about before, you said that, you know, you wanted to dive deeper into it about obviously your parents, and obviously that you moved from your dad's down to your mom after high school. What was the main reason for you moving out from your dad's in the first place?
Like which time?
There's two times.
Yeah.
Well, give us the most recent one, then we'll go back to the original one.
Okay, for sure. So. The most recent time was leading up to me moving out. My dad had fallen super deep into substance and drinking. That's something that he struggled with his whole life. And as I've gotten older, I've come to understand more. But he was kind of drunk all day, every day. And there was one time he wasn't letting me up the stairs. And he was just like kept pushing me. And so I was like, F this. But like I, you know, didn't say F. I said the word. And I went to go get my keys and leave. And then he, you know, stood in front of me and was like, who do you think you're talking to? And he was like in my face. And, you know, I could smell the alcohol on him. And I was telling him, I'm like, you need to get the F out of my way. And then after I said that, he kind of jabbed me in the chest and was like, who do you think you are? And at that point, I was just kind of fed up. It's because, like I said, this is something that I was dealing with for months and just ignoring. But when it directs you effectively and you directly. So I just couldn't ignore it. So, and like I said, I'd been training and I know what I'm doing with my hands. So I said, if you want to get effed up, come outside. And I pushed him out of my way and walked out the front door. And he actually came storming outside, which was, I really didn't think he would, but he came storming outside, pushed me in the back. And then it was a small verbal exchange. And then he pushed me again. And then I just kind of teed off on him. And, you know, he tries to say that, like, he wasn't, you know, trying to hit me back at all, but it simply isn't the truth. Like, he couldn't. My dad, for context, is, I think he's, like, 60 now. So it's not something that I'm proud of by any means. He's an older guy, and, you know, I'm young and know what I'm doing. So
right.
I beat him up pretty bad because there's a lot of, you know, deep like childhood trauma that just kind of came out. It was the first time I'd ever really laid hands on my father, and you know, he used to do that to me all the time when I was a kid, and so it just really felt like payback. And so I really let him have it, probably more than I should have. And then I left and was just driving around for a while, and then I got a text from him, and he kicked me out. Telling me that, you know, he's told me to come get my crap, and to get out, or he'll call the cops. And so I had to call my mom, and I asked to live with her, and she said, sure. And I grabbed all my stuff and moved to South Florida. And that's where I stayed up until this August, when I moved in with Graham. So I was living in South Florida when I lost Brandon, which really, you know, stinks, because Brandon and I were always close. But I moved back to South Florida, so I was seeing him all the time again, and we got close again, like I was when I was living there. And then he died. So that was really tough.
Yeah, I mean, you know, from going to Orlando, where you like kind of like rebuilt your family again, then going, you know, obviously getting that kind of not like ripped away from you, but obviously like you got to go back. So to Florida, you know, down south. So I mean, did that feel like that changed a lot of life for you? I mean, how was living with your mom obviously at that point? Because you go back, you know, from dad back to mom. So
I never enjoyed living with my mother. My mother is a deeply narcissistic person. She has a lot of her own issues. She's an alcoholic as well, but like the kind where she refuses to admit it. But it's not obvious, you know, to the point where my friends would kind of speak up and like, you know, is your mom good? Like, because she would pass out on the patio like almost every night, and that's just not normal. And a lot of times, you know, as alcoholics do, they like to take it out on everybody around them. So, you know, the things with that. And then also I was mourning a very close friend that I had just lost. And also, it felt like the last few weeks I had with Josiah were ripped away from me because of my present circumstance. And, you know, I was living in South Florida and I wasn't even there when he passed. And, you know, that just, you know, that's something that'll always bother me. And, like, you know, because we were supposed to go surfing like 2 days after my dad kicked me out. And, you know, that's something that's always kind of bothered me. And then my mom was not a very great support system. She feels, you know, being a narcissistic person, she feels that everything is done to her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she would like ask why I'm doing this to her. Like, just an insanely selfish thing to ask me at a given time. So I didn't enjoy that at all. But since I've moved out, I guess my mom and I, she's actually much nicer to me now that I don't live there. So, which is.
It tends to kind of be how it goes. But if there's something like a little piece of advice that I can give you, and you'll learn this as we dive deeper into the Bible, and I'm sure you've heard it in school, like when you went to Orangewood. But one of the commandments is honor your father and mother. And that can be really hard and for someone in your situation. But honoring them doesn't have to be doing every single thing they say, because obviously, I mean, you're an adult. You know ultimately what's best for you. And we can obviously tell that you're trying to make the best choices for yourself. But honoring them could be just like, hey, like texting them or calling them, like your dad, your mom, regardless of where you're at, your portion of honoring them would be calling your dad. I don't know how your relationship is now, if you even talk to him.
No, we've kind of made amends because he's made an effort, or he's continuing to make an effort to better himself. Like he, you know, admitting he has a problem, and, you know, he goes to Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, Narcotics Anonymous. Yeah. And so, like, he's making an active effort to be in my life and realizing the mistakes he's made. And that really, you know, speaks a lot. And he even helped me move into the place with Graham. He helped me a lot. Getting in there, like helping me find it and everything like that. So we have, honestly, our relationship is better than when I moved out. So I'm really glad for that. And I'm hoping for that with my mom as well. You know, I still, you know, tap in with her every now and again, you know, give her a call and let her know how I'm doing. And but like I said, as I got older, I kind of realized that, like, when you're younger, you have this picture of perfection for your parents. And especially coming from Orangewood, you see, like, you just wonder, why can't I have that? Why can't I have that platonic family or nuclear family? I mean, and it feels really unfair, and you hold a lot of resentment towards your parents, and that just doesn't help the relationship from either end. So, but as I gotten older, I realized that they're people too. Deeply flawed people, just like me. And they also didn't have, you know, a conventional childhood, and both of them struggled in their younger years. And, you know, that, you know, sticks with you and, you know, can kind of rub off on your kids. And I realize that now. And so I'm really grateful for them. After everything, I still am grateful for them. I think they've, you know, raised me well. The best that they could.
Yeah, and so when I say, like, honor them, it could be like you're doing now. Like, I'm really happy that you're building those relationships back. But, like, just calling and being like, hey, Mom, like, I love you. I hope you're doing good. I'm praying for you. But the number one thing you can do for them is, which it might be really hard, and it can be really uncomfortable, and it might take you a little bit of time, like, getting more rooted in the Word and getting your relationship stronger with God. But just be like, you know, I can't do calling them and being honest with you. Be like, I don't know the answers to your problems. Like, there's not much I can do. But what I can tell you is that God can solve every one of your problems and help you. Like, just that's it. Like, you could say a simple prayer. Like, you don't have to, people think they have to know how to pray. Like, to pray. You don't have to know how to pray. It's just like just like talking to a friend. Like, that's all it really is. So just that encouragement to them, being like, listen, it's really great, Dad, that you're in AA and NA and you're really trying to better yourself. But it's like, Dad, if you want to go above and beyond and you really want to succeed in what you're doing, put God first. Whether he takes it well or not, it's the fact that you're doing it, and you're doing one of the only things God has asked us to do, which is spread the good news and spread the gospel. Right. Brady, you raise your hand.
And obviously, one thing that, you know, I recently realized was that, you know, everyone's living life for the first time, and that obviously everyone's parenting for the first time. Like, we're all, like, everyone here's, you know, a daughter or a son. Like, we're all starting at the same point, you know. We all start somewhere and we all end somewhere. And that's, like, one thing for, like, a while. Obviously, my parents are a lot, you know, they're still together and stuff like that, and it's a very, like, calm household. But that, if anything, that, you know, I give my parents, like, a lot of break, because, like, I look at it as, you know, my dad's his first time being a dad. Like, he doesn't have it down to his science, and even how, you know, even in his older ages, he still will not have it down to his science. But the best thing I can look at is that he's trying his best, and that he's always tried his best. And, you know, there's been moments where I, like, look, my dad despised. I'm like, well, how would you say that? But obviously, he's trying to make the best decision he can as, you know, obviously, like I said, a son or a father or anything like that. But going back, obviously, you said that you moved out of your dad's at this point twice already. So the first time, what was, you know, what was the startup of that? What happened?
So the first time, my dad, and this was, like, like, before he kind of realized he, like, really had a problem, I guess you could say. But he was, back then it was more so the narcotics and the alcohol. And he would put his hands on me a lot. And it would be for really simple things, like when I was playing Pop Warner football, like if I didn't, you know, give my all in practice or something, or I rolled off a hit or something or other. And, you know, I don't really feel like going into, like, the exact detail other than he would, you know, hit me or whatever and put his hands on me, like, a lot. And, you know, and I'm not talking about, like, you know, he'd spank me. Like, you know, I think there's a fine line, and he definitely crossed it. And that kind of, it really bothers you, especially when you're so young, because your parents are your world, and they're supposed to protect you from things like that. And I didn't have a mom in my life. I guess I saw her, like, one weekend every month, because she lived in South Florida. So my dad was all I had, and for him to do that to me was bothered me a lot, and, you know, still kind of bothers me. But like I said, he had a really rough childhood, and he was disciplining me, I guess you could say, or teaching me the only way he really knew how. So I'm moving past it, and I know he is trying to, and that's all I can really ask for from him.
Yeah, I mean, it's good that now you guys feel like you're on a better term, and that, you know, you feel like you can, I'm not sure if that's fully there yet, I don't want to assume, but that you can, like, obviously, if you needed, like, a hand to, like, lend out to, that, you know, you can feel like you can maybe come back to him, and, like, that someone will be there to, like, to support you. That's what's most important about, obviously, being a parent, is that, you know, that your kid can always come back to you just in case something does happen, or, right, you know, something falls through, or, just, you know, just in case, you know, pray to God, something happens, that, you know, he will be there for you. And that's what's most important, you know, is having a support system for you when something like that has happened, obviously. Right. So, Ray, do you have any questions you wanted to ask? I know you had some things cooking.
I mean, it was really, I just wanted to share my thoughts on honoring them, because, I mean, that's off the top of my head, I want to say it's like commandment number 5. And it's just, it's something that I struggled with for a long time, really, up until recently. Like, it's like, man, no matter how bad your parents piss you off, it's still one of the commandments. You still have to honor your father and your mother and be there when they need you, do what they ask to. Like, and it's not exactly like, oh, like, my mom says, well, I need you to drive, like, to do something for me. But it's like, you want to honor them as much as you possibly can, just because that's what we're told to do. And also another thing, like, I can encourage you to do is just, like, get into the Bible. Because I know we're going to try and start up a Bible study. But even if you get the Bible app on your phone and read the verse of the day, like, every day, the way I think about it is, like, I mean, the Bible was written by God, essentially, like Jesus, through people as he spoke through them. But it's like, if my dad left me like a letter and he was gonna, like, I knew I wouldn't be able to see him for pretty much until we're reunited in heaven, I'd read that letter over and over and over again, and I would cherish it. So that's how I think about the Bible, is like, my Heavenly Father wrote that message to me. And so I want to read that over and over. I want to get into it. I want to study it. I want to know it, because that's what I have of him till I see him. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's a wrap for me. That's all I really have. Noah, Brady, you guys have anything else?
No, I don't have anything.
No, I feel like we touched
Jake,
anything.
Jake, do you have any questions? Like, do you have anything you want to ask us or tell us, or?
No, I think I'm good.
All right, well, I think that's our wrap. Like always, we are going to end with the verse of the day, which was, when doubts fill my mind, your comfort gave me the renewed hope and cheer, which is Psalms 94:19. So to end episode 5 on a great note, I cannot wait to hear Brady's goodbye, but here's mine. See y'all later. Peace. Noah?
Bye.
Jake? Bye.
Again, Jake, thank you so much. So I'll see you guys all later. Come here.